Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rev VR podcast. I am your host, Reverend Kyle. We are, under the flag of our paid sponsorship through Intel, going to continue our series of talking to indie developers, and we are going to be talking about Oculus Kinect 3, and we're going to see what kind of speculation we can gather from the indie developers that we're talking to over the course of the next couple episodes. And we're going to talk about some other things. Obviously, there's more going on in the VR scene than just Kinect, but that is kind of our destination point. So just to bring you up to speed with my paid sponsorship through Intel, we will be doing some Twitch streams at Kinect. It'll be both myself and everybody's good friend, Mr. Kent Bai, and we will be talking about Kinect and all the fun things that are going on at Kinect, and this is all through Intel and Twitch, so it's going to be a lot of fun. There is also going to be a Reddit AMA starring yours truly, Reverend Kyle, and this is going to happen on Monday, October 3rd at 7 p.m. Pacific time. So for you Eastern people, it's going to be at 10 p.m. So 3 hours difference. If you're off in the other side of the world, like in Europe or India or Australia or New Zealand or, you know, other places that I've never been to yet, go find out what time that is for you. So it's 7 p.m. Pacific time, October 3rd, Monday. That is the week of Oculus Kinect. I'm really excited to see how that goes. So with all of those announcements out of the way, let's get to our indie developer, our guest for the show today. I have brought with me one of my newer good indie developer friends, Mr. Ryan Smith. He is the founder of Inverse. He's also a Seattleite. I think that's the right term. And yep. We're going to talk about what his company does and all the fun, exciting things that he thinks is going to happen at Kinect 3. Ryan, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. How's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Now, you know, having been in Seattle here for about a year, maybe a little bit over a year, going to the Seattle VR meetups, I've, you know, met you and your team and seen what they've built, and I've played your experiences, and, you know, I feel like there is a lot of really great content coming out of your company. Tell us a little bit about Inverse and you know, who you are and what you're building.
Okay. Inverse was started, I guess, hot on the heels of me working at Cast AR on some augmented reality stuff. I was in Seattle, and there were a bunch of developers working on all kinds of cool VR, and so I started working kind of independently as a contractor and consultant with a bunch of them, bringing some game design and some art to a lot of different projects. And then we finally formalized it right after the Immerse conference last year. So almost exactly a year ago, it was called CVR back then, and got me a really amazing developer and a little bit of funding from one of my old friends. And we started this whole thing formally, started developing some titles. The most notorious one was The Nest, which we created at a VR hackathon just a couple months ago and released it not too long after the hack. Before that, we were working on a zombie game called The Wake, which had a really interesting trailer, and we kind of got the Steam page up and running, but got diverted onto other projects. So that one's on hold. And we're all over the map. We work on really just whatever we want to with peripherals. We've got some new stuff, some rifles that we're working with. We've got another game called Natural 20 that we're going to announce pretty soon. And we're working on multiplayer for like all kinds of stuff.
Man, you guys are all over the place. It's wonderful, and actually it has been a lot of fun to watch. I think that was the very first thing I saw that your team had built was the zombie game. Was it The Wake? Is that what it was called?
The Wake,
yep. Yeah. And I remember seeing you guys had a line of people waiting to play your game, and this is a Vive title, and so there were folks you know, lined up to grab. Now, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a point where somebody was playing The Wake and actually slammed a Vive controller as hard as they possibly could against the desk.
We all heard it.
Yeah.
From it, anywhere in that room, you could hear that. He tomahawked it into a desk. It was insane.
Now, in virtual reality, that was cleaving the head of a zombie, but...
He was picking up a baseball bat. The game is a melee-based game, and I think he had run out of whatever weapon he was using, and then he turned around and walked like 10 steps in one direction, walked right through the chaperone, saw a baseball bat lying on the ground, and just reached really hard towards the bat to pick it up off the ground and just crushed that controller into the table. And none of us even saw it coming because it was so far outside the chaperone, like, we couldn't believe it.
Just to give everybody a frame of reference, so we're in this like shared hacker space in like southern downtown Seattle, and this space is very open, very, you know, acoustically echoey, and there's all these different booths of people, and there's all these great conversations happening. There's 100 plus people all, you know, crammed into this room, and all of a sudden you just hear this
crash.
Yeah. In the whole place went silent because everybody knew what it was.
It was an original, one of the first developer kits for the early Vive, with the weird hexagonal controllers,
right.
And the exposed diodes. And so they feel flimsy in your hands, like way more so than the new ones do. And I am shocked that the controller didn't just explode into pieces. I did find later that one of the sensors had gotten knocked out from there, but it still kept working after that. So. Good job.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I cringed. I knew exactly what it was when I heard it, and I thought, oh no. And I did, and I came running over looking to see what, you know, where were there. I expected to see a gazillion little pieces all over the place, but no, sure enough, it was still intact and continued to give demos with it. So,
well, that may have been one of our last public demos, because we started running into that issue as soon as we went into testing, that like giving the idea of making a melee game was novel, and I think kind of almost still is novel. It hasn't really been tackled a lot. There's plenty of opportunities to shoot zombies, you know, with all kinds of guns, and at least a dozen different Vive games and even more Oculus games. But for like taking a baseball bat to their head is something that was really just like extra satisfying. But people lose themselves. They stop caring about the chaperone. They don't care that they're in a room with real people and could punch them in the face. So to be frank, we actually put that project on hold in a huge part because it's kind of unsafe, and we started getting worried about, you know, the legal implications of once people start actually like hurting their loved ones in VR.
It's an interesting subject, because you do end up with people who, like you said, they ignore the chaperone. And yeah. You really can't do that. Now, I've played my fair share of, you know, melee games in VR. I mean, hell, I can even go back as far as saying I've tried, you know, the original Servio's Zombies on the Holodeck at their office. And you want to talk about zombies coming at you from every direction. And you really do truly feel like I need to flail, and you start to forget where you are and who's around you, and, you know, people get hit, and this is going to happen. But, you know, the challenge with a melee game like that is you quite literally have to stop people from moving more than two or three steps in any direction. And yep. By then, they're surrounded constantly with zombies, and it's a really hard mechanic. But if you give them the option to run around, such as using Lighthouse, you know, room scale VR, then what's stopping them? Like, I can go 5 feet, I might as well be able to go 6 or 7. Screw this chaperone system. I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah. You're encouraging the fight or flight reflex when you'd go horror, you know, meets just like beating the crap out of things. And we've seen even with the Brookhaven experiment, which is almost 100% guns, like people will run into their furniture and like run over plants and smash into walls and things. Anyway, so it's on the shelf until maybe we can get like a double duty super chaperone, where if you get even close to the walls, we put like big poisonous spiders right in front of you so that no one walks through it or something.
There you go. There you go. That kind of leads us, we'll kind of jump around a little bit here, but that kind of leads us to something that I think is going to be very predominant in Oculus Connect 3 this year is their introduction of their Guardian system. Have you heard about this?
Well, we all kind of figured something like that would happen. If you're not going to use Steam, then you need something else to keep the people safe when they're using touch.
So do you think, you know, I'm not really sure how much, you know, interaction you've had with the touch controllers, but, you know, the Oculus Rift has a shorter cable. And I believe with the idea of room scale being a little iffy to Oculus, do you think you're going to find that their Guardian system is going to bring you in a little closer, like not be as large as we're used to with the Chaperone system?
I suspect it, and I also suspect the experiences are going to just be tighter in that way than the traditional Vive stuff. Like, you know, the example of the Wake is that we started with this big open alleyway, which is like 20 feet across. Then we realized that was too much, and we brought in, like, we put a car behind you, and we put some, like, some concrete K-rails around you. But even those were about 8 or 9 feet apart, which is, you know, the size of a big space. If I had to do it again, I would probably bring everything in even tighter to the point where the game is encouraging you to stay within those bounds. And I think that most, like, more Oculus Touch games have been designed with that in mind. So at least the ones that I've played, you actually, I don't know, you don't feel like you want to walk out of the space as much, and you don't feel like you want to turn around because they don't encourage you to turn around. So in that way, they may have some advantages just by, you know, keeping it tight, and then the Guardian will probably just aid in that. So I think it's going to work really well.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe Guardian and Oculus Touch controllers might awaken the wake. Yeah,
it could happen. It could happen. And I'm wondering if PlayStation's going to come out with something similar to that. Like, you know, they have you front facing, but they have motion controllers, and you're just expected to stand in front of your TV and everything. But I haven't actually checked out if they have a Guardian or a Chaperone.
You know, it's interesting. I've done their demos so many times. I have yet to notice anything, so I'm not really sure.
But we do the demos, and we plant our feet on those mats. They almost always have little, like, defined areas for you to stand where your feet can tell when there's a difference. We just ended up not doing those in our homes, and so the accidents don't really start happening until people get it unsupervised.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I did in my VR dungeon is I bought a 6x9 rug. And I just know that if I feel that change from the rug to the wood floor, that okay, I've overstepped my bounds. And so I just maintain my Chaperone to just be slightly larger than that carpet, and I'm pretty good. It's enough room to play around with. But I've also been known to go through the Chaperone knowing that I know I've got another foot. So I'm just going to go ahead and break it, you know. So let's talk about one of your other titles. And this is one that I really, you know, it's not often that I find a VR title that I fall in love with. And when I say fall in love with, this is something that I go home after a long day of work and then play it for a couple hours and feel satisfied. And we're talking about The Nest. So tell us, Ryan, what is The Nest in you know, the game mechanic and where it all came from?
Oh, all right. The Nest was made at Seattle VR Hackathon earlier this year. We made it in 36 hours. We started with a sniper rifle, and we started experimenting with what kinds of scopes work, what kind of smoothing can actually make it so you can aim over long distances. It was sort of just like an experimentation project. And once we got the mechanics working really tight, then we, through some art, some pre-existing art from the Unreal Store, some art that I had made in the form of some of the robots that you fight, and we created this, I guess, hopefully iconic situation where you're kind of in this small little sniper nest, and you're looking down at a destroyed village that's overrun by these crazy-looking robots. And you have this controller, which now has a big sniper scope on it. Like, the bigger the better. We might even make it bigger in the future because it becomes this portal to the world outside that's higher resolution than you can get with the VR screen. So this in this case, if you click right on the Vive controller, you zoom in using a telephoto lens, which is not super realistic on normal sniper scopes, but it gives you this ability to actually almost locomote out into the world while staying in a fixed location. And that mechanic just became instantly addictive. One of our team members, actually he was a member on someone else's team, but he was moonlighting on our team. He hacked together a 2x4, and some duct tape and I think some foam, and allowed us to put one of the Vive controllers into a makeshift stock for like a rifle stock. And that actually just leveled up the immersion even more. So that now my cat is now being a jerk. It doubled the immersion. And so suddenly we had this line of people who were all wanting to just try this peripheral combined with this new scope combined with, some pretty good art and some really good gameplay. And so we ended up putting that out on Steam, less than 2 months after that in early access. And that is where it has stayed for now. But depending on how long we have to talk, we are working heavily on multiplayer and we plan to show some stuff off pretty soon.
So my experience, and just for those of you who are not regular listeners or you've never heard me talk about it before, I claim to be kind of a crack shot when it comes to shooting games or even in real life. I've got a pretty good eye and pretty good aim. And so, for me to see a gun game, I was instantly drawn to it. Now, I have said numerous times that there is money, or at least a limited amount of money, to be made in peripheral accessories and things like taking a controller, a VR controller, and sticking a gun, into a gun so it can be used for that purpose is an obvious win. And that's something that, we saw this with the Nintendo Wii, and, I don't know how many stupid peripherals I had, the Wii controllers for my children. I'm not kidding. I am kidding. I mean, they were mostly mine, but yeah, I mean, lots of really fun stuff. And so when I saw you guys showing the Nest off and, you had this stock and it really felt natural. And then, you were nice enough to make it available to me. Obviously, it's available to everyone to play now, but I feel fortunate to have played a multiplayer version of the Nest.
Yes.
And oh boy, was that a lot of fun. I mean, to have two snipers going at each other is just so much fun. I don't know how to explain this really. It's in early access. Are you planning on putting a price on this and selling this as a full game?
Well, sure. Yeah. The main idea right now is because we went early access. We had a bunch of backers early on who, they got into the pretty simple experience, mostly what we made at the hackathon plus a bunch of polish. And they've been waiting for more. So I think that they're all going to definitely get this multiplayer as part of the package. We're going to make an announcement when it's actually ready to launch, where we're probably going to raise the price a little bit, compensate for the fact that we've put a lot more development into it. But people who have already bought it will get the price that it is now, which is the nice thing to do. As we could do it as a separate release, but that would kind of be a middle finger to the people who kind of bought into the early game. And so that's something I can't exactly guarantee what form it's going to be in the multiplayer, because we started working on a locomotion system. We started working on like a straight up first person shooter map, as part of our multiplayer experiments, in addition to the fixed position sniping. So there's a lot on the table right now, and we're kind of going through what we think is going to be the most fun, doing lots and lots of testing as we get this kind of, this whole thing sorted out for the end of this year.
Man, it is really solid. I mean, if those of you who are listening, you haven't checked it out yet, go check out The Nest. It's definitely worth it. It's a lot of fun, and you know, it does turn into almost a completely different game when you play a multiplayer, which just takes it up, you know, kicks it up to 11, or as I like to say, VR games get kicked up to 12. So yeah, it's really totally awesome. Now to add the, you know, we've already put the icing on top of the cake, but we need a little cherry on top. At VRLA Summer Expo, you guys at your, I don't want to say booth, but your area, were showing off something extraordinary in terms of input. What was the lettering?
It's the VR-15.
The VR-15. And what exactly is the VR-15?
It is a rifle peripheral for VR that is way more premium than I think anyone was ready for. I certainly wasn't prepared until we got our hands on it for the first time, like the day before VRLA. It's 3D printed nylon, with a custom finish. It looks like the coolest futuristic rifle that you've ever seen, and it has a mounting area that attaches a Vive controller to the top of it that lets it track in positional space. It has, you know, force feedback. It has some custom Bluetooth controllers and triggers, and it's this just it's also pretty heavy. it's weighted to be as realistic as possible. So when you have this in your hands, we put the 3D model into the Nest. So there's actually like a different version of the gun that you see in VR, and it matches perfectly this amazingly well crafted peripheral that was made by the folks at VArsenal. I don't think they have a lot of information on their website, but as they announce more stuff, I can say that these are slated to be in arcades. They have an offering called the Holo Cube that's going to be, I think, around the world by the end of this year and certainly next year. And so these rifles and the Nest are going to be available to play in conjunction coming up pretty soon.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. So VArsenal. Now, did they make this specifically for you with the intention of using this as like a sales tactic? Or, I mean, if I wanted to buy one of these things from these guys, is this something that I can go and get so I can have the full experience with the Nest?
I don't think you want to know how expensive they are to manufacture.
Okay.
So it would probably be one of the more expensive peripherals in its current state. Probably not as much as the super fancy treadmills or anything, but definitely up there. They're going to work to bring down the price and to consumer levels, I think, next year. For now, it's just about getting them out in the arcades where people maybe haven't even gotten exposed to the Vive at all, let alone these like next-gen controllers. So, yeah. Stay tuned.
Yeah, the line at VRLA Summer Expo was obscene.
Sorry about that.
Area. That was, no, it was good. Well, you've got a line that long for one of your experiences. You need to be happy about that. That's good. It's when they stop lining up. That's when you have to start worrying. So obviously we know that this experience, the Nest, is for the Vive. You've made a touch version of it as well. Is that correct?
We have. Yeah. And we got to show it off to our friends at Oculus. Apparently something is very funny outside. We got to show it off to our friends. It was the easiest integration we've ever done. So from a developer standpoint, I think anyone who has used either the Vive or the Touch can swap to the other one super, super easy. Like the engine makers, we use Unreal, but my friends who use Unity say that it's just about as easy. So it was maybe 20 minutes of work to just reconfigure the alignment and change some of the button mappings. It's nice. I personally prefer the Vive in this case for the awkward fact that the controller is heavier and feels kind of more stable. The Oculus Touch controllers are so light and that they're great at giving you hand presence, but they're not as great at giving you the feeling that you have something big and heavy in your hands.
I have too, and this is very off color for me because I would normally say, oh no, you know, the touch controllers are superior, but you are right. When it comes down to having something in your hand, the Vive controllers simulate that better than the Rift controllers, than the touch controllers do. I cannot, you know, I've honestly never played the Nest with the touch controllers other than one time just to see if it would work. But I've never sat down and actively played it for a long period of time. I always play with my Vive controllers. So I'm curious, like, do we need to have a plastic gun insert for the touch controllers? Is that what we need to get? Or, you know, how do we even this out here?
We've had some conversations at Oculus. I think that there's plenty of room for a custom-made peripheral. It's just really tricky to figure out where it goes in relation to the constellation trackers, to keep from doing the occlusion. I think the alignment that the VR-15 used may be the best answer in that case. They basically just use the tracking system from the controller, and then they have their own custom Bluetooth controller. That means that if you were to get one of the VR-15 rifles, you'd have a Bluetooth dongle that you have to plug in, and then it syncs up with the rifle, and you'd use it. It would interface with the game in a way that we kind of had to build alongside with them. But using the tracking would allow you to just kind of strap a controller in just about any alignment, rather than trying to get that hoop around your hand in the thing, and then somehow affix a stock or a bridge or something on that line. So trust me, I've stared at the touch controllers for hours and hours, trying to figure out how we could just hack together some 2x4s and some cardboard in the same way. But the fact that the Vive controller is symmetrical, so either hand can use a Vive controller, mm-hmm. versus ambidextrous, I guess, versus the touch controllers, which are right-handed and left-handed specific. So it's tricky. It is trickier.
Yeah, I feel like you're right, though. I think that, you know, the idea of just using the touch controller as just a tracker slash maybe, you know, some haptic feedback, I don't know. But, I mean, you could put it on the end of a Bluetooth controller, like, I don't know, like a guitar. And it would probably work fairly well. But then at that point, you have this Bluetooth controller that's doing all the heavy work. And then the touch controller is just kind of acting as a tracker.
So. I see your segue, but I raise you. But I raise you the fact that the folks at PlayStation have made a custom aim controller. And so when theirs comes out, we definitely plan to support that. It's not formally announced or anything, but the aim controller fits perfectly with our plans for the Nest. Something similar, I think, is in order from Oculus. They could benefit, like, let's just face it, guns are fun in VR, and guns can track really well in VR, because mm-hmm. people aren't flailing them around. They're actually holding them steady and using them to aim. So we kind of learned this with the Nest, like the way people hold a Vive controller with two hands. They actually, usually most people, like, make a little tripod for the front of the controller out of their offhand, and then just kind of hold the other hand, one comfortably. So yeah, the opportunity for these peripherals is definitely out there. I would throw that as something that I would like to see from Oculus Connect, if they actually want to make a constellation tracked gun style controller. That would be, like, glorious. But yeah, and then I as back to your segue, strapping things on and making guitars out of them is what we did at the hackathon this last weekend. So you just played it last night. Would you like to
vamp so it? I'm not going to pretend like I remember exactly the interesting naming that you gave it, but you and I both had an interesting experience together, and I'll just leave it at that. Afterward, which you and I had conflicting outputs in terms of whether or not we liked certain things, and again, we're not going to talk about it, but you went and had this wonderful hackathon, the Seattle VR hackathon, and put your team together, and you created a keyboard input that closely resembled a musical instrument while I was riding on a very spiky vehicle in the desert with, I mean,
just pounding, pounding war drums.
No, yes. Dude, how far away do we have to be with this?
We made Guitar Hero meets Mad Max. Yes. There. Okay. There I said it.
There you go.
Yeah. We called it Guitar Villain. Maximum Madness is the title that we went with. It was made in 36 hours, and it started from the crazy idea that if we track or strap a Vive controller to a keyboard and then hold the keyboard in your hands, you can use the space bar as the strum bar, and the zero key, the delete key, and the enter key as your chords. And so we basically made our own guitar peripheral, and then we talked about what would be a cool guitar theme, and someone pointed out that the guy in the red pajamas from Mad Max is kind of the coolest person who's ever played guitar, so we just kind of rolled with it. And you're driving down the road at like 50 miles an hour, and every time you hit a proper riff at the proper time, you blast these freaking spiky dune buggies out of your way who are trying to ram you. And I'm quite proud of our trampling on someone else's IP rights, but I plan to. we're gonna send some appropriate letters and maybe hopefully get some permission, or at least, you know, some of them saying that they're not gonna sue us if we pursue it.
I loved it. I really, you know, I found that it was, you know, this is what I like about you guys is you're not afraid to think outside the box. You know, here you are taking a keyboard and strapping. I mean, of all of the most mundane input devices possible, a keyboard strapped to a Vive controller. I mean, who thinks to do that? I mean, that's just brilliant. And then, you know, back in the day, there actually was a like PC emulator that was very similar to Guitar Hero, where you did use a keyboard, and you actually used the I want to say it was like the enter button and the F keys to play a PC version of Guitar Hero. And this is something that I did prior to me having my Nintendo Wii, where I could actually play real Guitar Hero. And I love the fact that these innovative ideas just keep coming back around. And, you know, again, it's a hackathon title. See, this is where, and hopefully the VR community appreciates these things. So many really good ideas come out of hackathons. Hackathons are an essential component to the creative flow of stuff. Yes, do them.
Everyone do them.
Yes. You'd be amazed at what you can accomplish when you're stuck in a room with a bunch of people that you don't really fully know or understand, and you're given 36 hours and you have a mission.
And decide ahead of time that you're not going to sleep on Saturday. You're just going to run all the way through until the end.
Yep.
And then if you accidentally finish early, then you reward yourself with sleep. But just don't expect sleep.
It just really, I mean, I saw so many great titles, things that came out of this last hackathon. There were so many interesting, you know, game mechanics, the people thinking outside of the box, really good, you know, surprisingly good art in some of it.
Yep.
You know, so I'm really excited, you know, when I see these kind of things. You know,
I just get super proud of Seattle every time I see these things. I'm like, yes, this community is so great, and there's so many people willing to throw a weekend at this and then go back to their day jobs and them on Monday. It's insane.
Yeah, no, and then, you know, the excitement continues too, because then they show it all off at the meetups. I mean, I'm very proud of the Seattle VR family that has been produced, and, you know, kudos to all of the people that are working on maintaining it and just generating excitement about it. I'm very pleased that I landed here in Seattle. Just a wonderful, wonderful group of people to be associated with. So let's talk about, you know, since the big thing to talk about is Kinect.
Yes.
What do you see being? So we've already talked about a couple things. We talked about Guardian. We talked about the possibility of some peripherals, you know, Constellation tracked peripherals. What else should we see?
I have one that's on the top of my list. Okay. That I think needs to happen. Oculus folks, if you're listening, the Oculus webcam that tracks you needs to be redesigned with custom silicon so that it can just transmit the tracking data wirelessly. So those, they need to make them no longer require 20-foot cords to go room scale. They can't require all of our USB ports. They basically need to simplify it. And if they could, like, you don't, a wireless headset is amazing and we all want it, and it's going to happen when it can happen. But that's trying to stream, you know, high resolution, like HD 4K images at 90 frames per second. Whereas the actual Oculus tracking cameras, they're doing image processing at, you know, the same, I guess, 90 frames per second. But that image processing, I think, can be streamlined in such a way that they could then just transmit the data wirelessly. And then you could put those cameras all over. You could just, you'd run out of batteries all the time, but you could put one on a shelf. You could put one everywhere that you want to go. And if it was me, that is an announcement that I would love to see. It's just, you know, cutting one of the cords, even though the other cord is still maybe a little ways up.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, you know, what their next step is going to be. I mean, in terms of their, you know, what does V2 look like? Do they make the wireless cameras? Do they, you know, I've always thought that their sensors need to have a wider frustum. I feel like they just, it's too narrow of a frustum, you know, enhance your cones. And, you know, other than that, you know, the wireless, will it increase latency? I don't know. You know, it's just, it's such a hard thing to try to predict where the next thing's going to go. I know a lot of people are saying, you know, well, we want positional tracking in the, like Gear VR. You know, people have images of John Carmack running around with a Gear VR with the pass-through camera on. It's you know, positionally tracking him. I don't know. You know, I just want to see them make more cameras available. I mean, seriously, dude, other than redesigning, which I think is a great idea, I think there's a lot of things that can be done with the design of the sensor, but hell, just make more of them available. I mean, when you tell me that your runtime can support up to, you know, what, 4 different sensors, how is that possible unless you're lucky enough to have 4 sensors laying around? you know,
no, yeah.
I mean, I can attest to the fact that if you put 3 sensors on it, the tracking is better. I normally don't use 3, I just use 2, but I've got one, like you said, on a cable. I got this big long extension cord on one side of my room going up to a sensor that's mounted on my wall, and then I've got another one sitting over here at my desk. It doesn't give me the biggest area in the world, but it's good enough. But yeah, they definitely do need to do something about that. You know, I'm kind of curious, why isn't the Nest a touch release title?
That's a good question.
Did they mention it? Did they suggest it?
It might still be. It was so easy to make for the touch that we didn't think twice about actually announcing, hey guys, this is going to be on home. But yeah, we should probably get on that. That's a good point.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool, because then you have, you know, double the, well, I shouldn't say double, but you know, there's an exponential increase.
A non-zero increase. Exactly. In user potential in market base.
However you want to say it. I know somebody will email me, you know, it's not really that it's not really a double of a, it's like, yeah, I know. So what about, what else, from Kinect? I mean, anything else that you think might be, game changing, or, you know, our jaws will hit the ground and OMG.
Well, I think I threw out my big one. If Oculus were to announce a next gen Rift this soon, I think it would do weird things to the market. But it would do unpredictable things to the market, because no one's actually seen how that happens yet. Like they released, the CV1. I think they've said that CV2 is a ways out. But I would be interested to see when they start unveiling, like, CV2. Because CV1, I think we saw for 6 months, essentially, before it came out. So if they do plan on having anything next year, like, that's actually going to start getting shown relatively soon.
I would imagine a second generation headset prototype exists in their lab. possibly even more than one iteration. I would imagine that those things possibly even existed before CV1 came out. But I like to make the joke that technically CV1 isn't fully released yet because we don't have the controllers yet.
I was at Oculus with some of my good friends and I called it a DK3.
I love it.
I got dirty looks. It was great.
That's wonderful. So I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't ask a good question that I know our sponsors are going to be curious about. When you're doing your devving, your video game, your VR gaming, what kind of hardware, what kind of rigs are you doing all of this on?
Everyone that that we can get it, we run an i7-6700K. Some overclocked, some not. That's just kind of been our go-to. And we've got, at the moment, NVIDIA cards and everything. I believe that for Immerse, we might be running on some different hardware. But, yeah, mostly we run the gamut of NVIDIA cards. We've got a 970. We've got a 980 laptop. We've got a 1080. I guess I don't have any other of the 10 series. I should get more video cards.
Well, and the thing is you're proving a really great point, and this is one of the reasons why I made the decision that I did to build my VR rig the way I did, is that, you know, you may have a wide variety of video cards, but, you know, the consistent component is that Intel Core i7-6700K, which is a processor that... so many people that I know in the VR space, developers and heavy gamers are using, that it just makes perfectly good sense that you would also be using that hardware. So kudos to that. I'm sure our sponsors would are very happy to hear that sort of thing as well.
I'm a fan.
All right, cool. So I think Connect is going to be fun. You guys are in Inverse is going to have some sort of presence, right, at Connect?
A couple months ago, we were very much thinking that we could get a demo in for it, for the touch, but we kind of ended up working on just completely other random things. So we're not going to be demoing there, but we're definitely going to have some people there. It's always a great event. Everyone keeps poking me and winking and nodding and saying there's going to be some cool stuff and some cool announcements. We don't want to miss it at all.
Yeah,
but then Immerse is just a couple days after that, and then Steam Updates is the next day.
Right, lot going on. It's going to be a very busy 2 weeks. I know it's going to be ridiculously exciting. You know, as all these announcements come out for Connect 3, you know, keep in mind, everyone, that you know, Intel and Twitch and me and Kent Bai will be doing streams from Connect, just like we did at PAX. It was a lot of fun. We did a daily wrap up every day, and it's a lot of fun. We did, you know, shot some experiences, and cameras followed us around and said, "Hey, look at all these cool things we're doing." So, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think pretty exciting, and of course, you know, it's all VR. You know, PAX is other stuff, but this is all VR, and it's just really going to be exciting. So,
I don't know if we're allowed to speculate about Steam Dev Days, but I would like to see one of those Steam consoles, the Steam machines that basically got mothballed, remade for VR.
And, like, put into a backpack, right?
I won't. Well, the backpacks can happen. But no, I think that VR needs a console. Like, and they made, Valve made a console, and they just made it exactly half a generation too soon. So like the VR people must be going crazy that they need a certain spec on the processor, a certain spec on the graphics card and the RAM. And they made these Linux boxes just before the whole, that they were good enough to run VR. So I've been thinking this for over a year that like Valve can dust off like the Steam controllers and maybe try to put Lighthouse tracking on them. And then maybe try to get that initiative back going with a VR console, because, you know, there's still a lot more people who need VR, and a lot of them just can't afford it.
Hey,
so,
I mean, those things, I mean, I know Alienware made a couple of them, and there were some other, you know, Steam boxes out there. They were sub $500, but they still had Intel Core i7 processors. So,
exactly.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's definitely some value to that. You know, yeah, I, you know, we haven't really talked much about Steam. There's so many things coming up over the course of the next couple of weeks. It's going to be hard to keep track of it all. But yeah, I mean, Steam Dev Days is definitely going to be a topic as we move forward. And then obviously, you know, Immerse is very exciting. I'm going to be looking forward to showing off some of my own stuff that we've built at work at Studio 216 at Immerse. So it's going to be an exciting couple of days, all, you know, packed into 2 weeks of VR right. goodliness. I'm super excited about it. You know, also I've been on the lookout, and I've gotten a couple links sent to me so far. I'm on the lookout for mixers and parties that happen at Connect, because that's where all the real good stuff happens. So sure. where's my invite? Send me invites, and then I'll get them doled out to the other perper people, and you know, send them to Ryan too, because, you know, he wants to go and have fun as well.
Woo.
Still looking. I've had quite a number of people send in ideas for new intro and outro music, and really, really good contenders here. I think I might actually have one that I like. Also looking for some logos, and we're going to have some other developers on the show. We're going to try to cram a whole bunch of them in before Connect. I've got a really nice one lined up already for next week or this week, depending on what day I decide to release this. We're recording this on a Friday, so if I release it on a Monday or Tuesday, it'll be later this week. So just stay tuned. Lots of podcasts coming out. So Ryan, okay, so tell us, where do we find more information about Inverse, and how do we get to your wares?
Oh yeah, we got inverse.com, which is Inverse. See, we got the VR in the middle. And we're at Inverse Studios on Twitter. And basically most of those things will link you up to our Steam pages and everything. I think that we've got one blog post, but we might do a couple more blog posts because we really do like talking about these things. And since we do so many of these hackathons and so many experiments, you know, we have our own locomotion system that we haven't really shown up yet. So like there's tons of stuff to talk about. And, so yeah, hit us up there, inverse.com and at Inverse Studios.
Very good, yes, and I do recommend everybody go out and check out the Nest on Steam VR and just play the heck out of that game, and just try to picture what you would design. So maybe you have an idea for, you know, a gun design. If you're one of those people out there that just happens to have a 3D printer laying around, print off your own gun design and send it to us, and we'll check it out, because I'm really curious to see. I'm looking for a affordable gun that I can play the Nest with, that I can slide my controller into. So who knows? Maybe somebody will come up with an idea for you.
I have modeled one. I just am a novice at how to get something that's over 22 inches long into a 3D printer bed. So yeah, working with some people to figure out how to cut them up. But the do-it-yourself stuff, the 3D printing, we'd love to see that. It's kind of, I see such the huge opportunity for someone to swoop in and make like the definitive, like Vive rifle peripheral, probably the same thing for swords. Like, you know, so the makers out there should really get on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Encourage the makers to go out there and make it happen, because you're a maker. So make stuff. All right.
See what you did there.
All right. So, you know, big thanks to our sponsor, Intel, and everything they're doing. Look forward to collaborating and doing some more fun things as we journey down the road to Oculus Connect 3. Ryan, thank you very much for being a wonderful guest on the show today.
Thank you. It's been fantastic.
All right. And thank you all very much for listening.